Good evening. Go ahead and turn with me, if you will, as we get started to 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. And while you're turning there, I've got some good news and bad news to share with you. The good news for you is there will be no pop quiz like what Craig gave us this morning. I wouldn't do that to you. The bad news is for me, though. You might have heard in Josh's sermon he said that I told him I hope he did terrible this morning. It's not quite the way I said it, but in fact, he did not do terrible. We had a great sermon this morning. And so coming off that great week, great series of gospel meeting sermons from Brian Price, and then what Josh gave us this morning, the onus is on me, I guess, to keep it rolling. So the pressure's on me. Go ahead, if you're not already there, 1 Peter 1, verses 3 and 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you. Now, before we really jump into this sermon, I'd like you to take a moment to think about what was just described. Go ahead and, if you need to, close your eyes for a second, but you don't have to do that. If I asked you to explain this inheritance, would you think that it's A, just merely adequate, B, enough, or C, more than my wildest expectations? I think we'd all say C, because remember, it's imperishable, undefiled, and unfading. But for the purposes of this sermon, I want to look at this idea of the way we treat things in our society as something not being enough, just isn't enough to keep my interest or something like that. Now, enough is defined by Webster's as occurring in such quantity, quality, or scope as to fully meet demands, needs, or expectations. And they gave the example of enough food for everyone. I look at it this way. If I have enough blessings on this earth, and I really do, I have a lot of blessings on this earth, and then I have an unimaginable inheritance waiting for me in heaven, that should absolutely be enough for me to do what is asked of me. But is it always? So as I began preparing this sermon, the idea originally came from, strangely enough, a trip my wife and I took to Chicago last fall, and we went to see the musical Hamilton. And I'd heard the soundtrack several times. The show's been out for 3 or 4 years now, and it's always struck me that Alexander Hamilton really could have used a little dose of learning what would be enough. And he's a conflicting character in our history because he did so many great things. We're going to focus on a few things maybe he didn't do so greatly. As a little background, Hamilton, I didn't realize this until I heard this musical the first time. Hamilton was actually born and raised on a Caribbean island. He wasn't born in New York like I thought he was. He grew up without a father. His mother and father were not married. And that was typically hard for them, or very hard for him back in those days. He wasn't even allowed to attend school because his parents weren't married. So he had that hard time to start with. Then his mother got diseased and died. And to make it worse, the relative he went to live with, he committed suicide. So now it's been a pretty rough life so far for Alexander Hamilton. And then a hurricane ravaged his island. Just tore everything apart. Very dependent on, I believe, sugar for an export, and that was ruined at the time. But this young man, this young boy still, he wrote a pamphlet because he was really well read, despite the fact they wouldn't let him go to school. He wrote this pamphlet, got it out there. People around the world, or at least his part of the world, learned of their plight, and they sent help. And so the people of his island, they took up a collection, and they said, we're going to send you to the mainland. We're going to get you an education. So they send him to New York. Now, he gets to New York right at the beginning, or just before the American Revolution, so it's right at the precipice of our history, and he meets and marries a wealthy man's daughter. He even finds a place on the staff of George Washington during the war. It would seem like he's made it. As the song I'm about to quote to you says, look back at where he came from. He came from literally nothing and overcame a lot to get to there. Now, the musical places his wife's first pregnancy sometime during the middle of that Revolutionary War. And in the musical, Washington sends him home to be with his wife at some point, and that's when he finds out she's pregnant. Now, there's a song called That Would Be Enough. And that's good news number two for you. I'm not going to sing it to you. But I will read part of it to you because it really kind of gave me this idea to start researching the scriptures a little bit and find instances where we don't always think that something's enough. So Eliza is his wife and she's the one singing this song. I relish being your wife. Look around, look around. Look at where you are. Look at where you started. The fact that you're alive is a miracle. Just stay alive. That would be enough. And if this child shares a fraction of your smile or a fragment of your mind, look out, world. That would be enough. I don't pretend to know the challenges you're facing, the worlds you keep erasing and creating in your mind, but I'm not afraid. I know who I married. So long as you come home at the end of the day, that would be enough. We don't need a legacy. We don't need money. If I could grant you peace of mind, if you could let me inside your heart, oh, let me be a part of the narrative in the story they will write someday. Let this moment be the first chapter where you decide to stay. And I could be enough, and we could be enough. That would be enough. Well, you get the feeling she knows he doesn't think he has enough. And it really was never enough for Hamilton in a lot of cases, especially at that time of his life. Again, I say it was conflicting. He did a lot for our country. Even up to this day, a lot of our banking system and Wall Street and things like that is based off something he created. And so he was great for us in a lot of ways. And as we look at back almost 250 years, he really did some things. He was also known to work harder than his peers, which took away from his family life. The musical notes that he and two of the other founding fathers were going to write the Federalist Papers together. It's basically an op-ed column that they would send to a newspaper and get their agenda out there. John Jay was one of the other ones. He was going to write, I believe they're going to write 15 or 25 total. He only wrote four because he fell ill. And Hamilton ended up writing 51 within a very constrained time period. But he let his hope for power and greatness get in his way of his family and I believe probably obviously his spiritual life, and nothing was enough for him. So when is enough not enough for us when it comes to our potential reward in heaven? And why is that? We know that God laid out this plan for us. When we see the plan, we believe the plan, and we follow it, we should get our reward, and it should be way more than enough. But oftentimes, we as humans, we have our own ideas. Though many of us know God's plan, those of us who have been in the church long enough, we've seen plenty of people, and maybe even ourselves, decide whether consciously or subconsciously that reward that's way down the line isn't enough for me to keep working. People sometimes find themselves that they can do things on their own, away from church, away from God, and that's really too bad. Now, enough not being enough, I came up with three thoughts: money, prestige, and power. These are things that can maybe we don't have enough of, or we think we don't. We see the accumulation of money. We want more possessions. We want more money. Sometimes that really grabs a hold of people. Maybe power, whether it's a race to the top on a corporation or a corporate ladder, or maybe even power in a leadership role in politics or something else like that. And even I threw this in there, maybe even somebody decides a person's spouse, being with that one person the rest of their life. Maybe some people just decide that's not enough. That's not enough for them. And in our case, many of these examples, and I'm sure many, many more, are contributing factors to turning our backs on what should be enough. And that's having a home in heaven with God. Because of what that means, I told you I read the passage there from 1 Peter. The reward is up here, but also, if we look at Matthew 25 and verse 41, we learn a little bit about what the consequences of making that decision is. There in Matthew 25, verse 41. Then he will say to those on the left, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Often it isn't enough, though, and that's despite these consequences we read about. We know about the lofty heights of what we can get, and even though it's inconceivable to us, we know it's amazing, and then we have these consequences. Sometimes we want more money, we want more prestige, and we want more power, but shouldn't eternal life be enough for us? I think about why did the prodigal son leave home? If you turn to Luke 15, there in verses 11 through 13, it says, and he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided the property between them. Now, not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. That future inheritance that he knew he was going to get someday, that wasn't enough for him. He wanted it now. And maybe even the idea of spending the rest of his life in that plot of land next to his brother, that wasn't enough for him. He wanted to take it and enjoy something somewhere else. I found a few biblical examples or examples of God's people who maybe decided enough wasn't enough. Now, we know Lot and Abraham's houses traveled together as Abraham was going to the promised land. And it says that when the two houses began to get too big, there was a lot of scuffles between the two. And they were asked to choose, or they were going to go their separate ways. And Abraham said for Lot to make the first choice. And in Genesis 13, verses 11 through 13, there it tells us that, so Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. Lot went with what appealed to his eye. He made that decision, and he made it in the moment. And apparently, I guess, he knew that Sodom wasn't the best place to be, but he decided to go there anyway. A few verses later, God tells Abraham to lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward, eastward and westward. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. Abraham trusted God. He trusted God enough to let Lot pick first and then get what God gave him because he knew that'd be the best thing for him. I look at Peter. I thought Brian Price said it very well the other night. He said that Peter was one of the more human people in the Bible. And he said that because he said we can relate to Peter. And we see the ups and downs. We see the great zeal he has at times, and then we see the decisions he also makes at other times that aren't for the best, and frankly are probably decisions that we might make as well if we were faced in the similar situations. But I picked out walking on water as one, an example where he had the faith at first, but then he didn't. And then also denying Christ right before he was crucified. Now in the water example, I'll address a little bit more in the moment, the example of how faith can quickly leave us. It can happen very quickly. And we were working toward that reward, but sometimes it does just take off on us. And the other example from the Bible I give is Judas. Judas, again, much like Peter, is one of the 12 apostles. He saw, on a day-to-day basis, I would guess, the miracles Jesus was working. He heard the message. He knew what Jesus was going to do, and he knew what the promise was. If we turn to Matthew chapter 26, look there in verses 14 and 16. Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?" And they paid him 30 pieces of silver. And from that moment, he sought an opportunity to betray him. Now, I'll admit, I haven't read that passage for a long time before I was working for this lesson. And in my mind, I was wondering, now, how did this opportunity come across him? Did somebody maybe approach him and try to recruit him to do this? But no, it says he went to the chief priests. He had all this promise of what Jesus was talking about and all the miracles he was working, and yet he decided that wasn't enough. He needed to add this 30 pieces of silver. Now, I preached this sermon, or one much like it, at Wolf Creek back home here about a month and a half ago, and they don't have very many teenagers, actually none, so I left this next part out. But given what we've been talking about, and given an idea that I had, I wanted to share the next one. Now, this one's not from the Bible, but it's me. So I know earlier this year we've heard a lot in our study of evidences about a possible reason why young people leave the faith, being that in high school and college they're learning about things like evolution and other things that are just not at all what the Bible teaches. And that is absolutely a true example of things that can go wrong for a young person. But I'm going to give you another example, and I want you to understand, as I mentioned with Peter in that that quick turn of faith, there are so many things of anybody in this room at any age that can knock us off that narrow road. And so my example is this. I graduate high school and I enroll at Ohio State as an 18-year-old freshman, and it's the first time I'm on my own. Did you know that college students like to stay up late? That tended to happen quite a bit in Park Hall. And so I'm up late, and I'll tell you, I wasn't out partying and drinking or anything like that, but I'm up late. And I'll tell you another thing about college students, even if they have a scheduled class, if they stay up too late, sometimes they don't go. And so the next thing about Ohio State back then, I don't know if it's still true, I lived on South Campus. You parked your car as a freshman on West Campus, and you had to find your way to your car if you wanted to go somewhere. And it was about 2 miles, maybe a little more. So picture me up too late every night of the week, and then on Sunday morning, the first time I have the chance to decide whether or not I'm going to go to church or not, am I getting up early enough to go 2 miles, either by a campus bus or walking, jump in my car and find a congregation to attend? A lot of people I know do that. They do the right thing. I did not. Now, I'll tell you, it wasn't my intention or my goal to stop going to church the second I got away from home. That was not it. It was a domino effect of things. 1 week turned into 2 weeks, turned into 3 weeks, turned into, oh my goodness, I just graduated college, and I haven't been back to church. And I want you to understand, especially teenagers, I didn't stop believing in God. The Bible says if you don't do the right thing, you don't really love God. But I believed in God, and like I said, I wasn't out partying and drinking and things like that. But apparently, his reward was not enough for me at that time. The hope for that. And I'll tell you another thing. As quickly, if we don't have a good solid base of faith in God and in our faith to serve as a Christian, as quickly as that can be knocked off, as it was with me, it took me almost 8 years to get back on what I hope is the right way. It's really easy to get knocked off that path, but sometimes it's very hard to come back. So why isn't enough for any of us? Maybe it's because we can only see what's directly in front of us. I mentioned earlier about being a certain age, and an 18-year-old doesn't think as much as they probably should about eternity. Because 18-year-old, you think you've got it made, right? You've got everything figured out. So eternity is as real in the moment as it should be. And then, as Kevin spoke about this morning, we sometimes know a lot of things that are for the best. But do we always do them? Do I still at 39 years old, and I'm telling you, 39 for one more month. I'm not 40 yet. Do I know I should eat better, exercise more, and just in general take better care of myself than I had to when I was that 18-year-old kid? I absolutely know that. But I don't always. And I mentioned the sleeping thing. I don't stay up nearly as late as I did in college, but maybe sometimes I stay up a little later than I need to if I need to be somewhere the next morning, or if this guy or his brother is going to wake me up at 6 a.m. But do I always get the sleep I need? Probably not. So I've given you examples from the Bible. I've given you Alexander Hamilton from the 1700s. I've given you me from 1997 through 2005. It can't really be that just society right now is so impulsive that we can't keep an eye on the ball, right? It can't be. Like 30-some years ago, there was a song by the band Queen, and it said, "I want it all, and I want it now." That's the 1980s, but I think that describes a lot of the way we are now. But I'm sure 30 years before that, you want to go back to the 1950s? Was there something pulling any of you away from being right here where you should be? There probably was. It seems to me that a human characteristic is that having discipline in any part of life is hard. And good for you if it's not hard, because it is hard for some of us. Now, the good news for me, and hopefully anybody else in this room, is that the decision to leave the faith doesn't have to end bad. We can end up making the right choice and get back on that road to heaven. We know Peter, he rebounded nicely, aside from what we learned this morning about Paul rebuking him a little bit later in the New Testament. Peter rebounded nicely, and he was as key a cog to that machine that helped the first century church get off the ground as we have. We know it's a story, but the prodigal son came home. He knew that even the being the lowest servant in his father's house was better than where he was living at that time. Lot was saved from the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, his choice to be in Sodom had some repercussions, as we know, but he was saved. We know Judas, though, wasn't. Judas didn't even get to spend that 30 pieces of silver. He committed suicide. Now, I talked to Josh a few months ago about the possibility of this sermon topic and whether it would fly or not. And he said, hey, it sounds like you're preaching a little bit on something like contentment and having and being content. And he mentioned Philippians 4, 11 through 13. And I think the two, having enough or realizing you have enough or being content with what you have, are pretty closely related. So I'm going to go ahead and read that to you as well. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. And in any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Now, if we find ourselves turned around, we need to decide that we had enough when we were faithful. Again, I said, if you don't have that strong base of faith, you can get knocked off pretty quickly. And then climbing back on can be pretty difficult. But we needed to make that decision. And the invitation song I asked Ted to sing today, Why Do You Wait? Now, I grew up with a version that had like four or five verses, and it's a little different. But it does read like it's meant to be sung to someone who has not been saved yet, has not been baptized. But I can add a word here or there and pretty much make it good for any of us who are baptized and maybe left the way a little bit. It says in the song, why not come, and I say back to him now, why do you tarry so long? What do you hope to gain by a further delay? And again, why not come back to him now? We sing a song here as well called The Great Redeemer. In that song it says, he is everything to me, and everything shall always be. I'd like to make that more true in my life, and I know for a long time it wasn't, and so I'm going to keep trying to work on that. There's another song, Just a Closer Walk with Thee, and in it it says, I'll be satisfied as long as I walk, dear Lord, close to Thee. I will be satisfied. I will have enough if I do that. So all these things hold true if we have accepted Christ or we haven't. And we have a chance to make it right if we haven't. And I ask you, let's make enough a priority. Let's try individually and even as a group to do what we need to do to make having enough a priority. Now, if you have a need, let's come forward as we stand and sing.